Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA prayer. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So we've come a long way. We're at the 14th week. We are at step 12, part 2. And we have a wonderful panel who's come all the way from Matthews and Williamsburg, Virginia. Please help me welcome Terry and Bob. Thank you. So, I'm going to read the first paragraph. We're going to start on page 96, and then the panel will share a few minutes each on each reading. So, step 12 says, carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. First paragraph on 96. Suppose now you are making a second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Bob?
Alcoholic, my name's Bob.
Bob. Hey, Bob.
And thank you, Dave, for inviting us down. My home group is Fellowship of the Spirit in Gloucester, Virginia. We have a Saturday beginners, Wednesday beginners meeting and a Saturday speaker meeting, 8 o'clock on Saturday, 7 o'clock on Wednesday. My favorite meeting is a beginners meeting and always has been. My sobriety date is December 28, 1988. For that, I will forever be grateful to this fellowship. These spiritual principles that led me to recovery and sponsorship. A God of my understanding is at the center of my recovery, and without that strength of my higher power, I don't think I would have made it through the process. But I'm so glad I drank for 27 and a half years. I'm now sober 30 years. I'm on my third sponsor. My sponsor today I've had for 20 of those 30 years. My sponsor is someone that I am totally upfront with absolutely everything that's going on in my head, and it has to be that way. And I hope you're that way with your sponsors, for sure. The 12th step in the reading. I say I was drinking for 27 and a half years, and I loved alcohol from the get-go. It did for me what nothing else, not even my girlfriend Jeannie Gillespie, could do for me. I'm attention deficit. I struggled through school, and alcohol was the magic elixir for anyone who's attention deficit and suffers from slightly low self-esteem. But it doesn't make everyone an alcoholic if you're attention deficit with low self-esteem, but a whole bunch of us are, I can tell you, and I've met a lot of them over the years. The idea of me giving up alcohol during that period of time is ludicrous. Why would I give up something that did for me every single time I ingested it into my body? It put me and took me to that place, and it did everything for me that I wasn't capable of doing without the alcohol. It leveled the playing field, made me handsome. I could get the girls, and I felt like I was an equal to anyone. And when I wasn't drinking, it was quite the opposite for me. And alcoholism is a progressive disease, and let me tell you, I became a stumbling drunk after a period of years. I married and had two beautiful daughters, 2 years and 2 days apart, and then I ran off with the secretary of the vice president of Best Products and moved out of the house, and I left two young girls. This is my thinking when it's on booze. I've hurt just about everyone that ever loved me as a result of drinking behaviors. And the whole time I thought I was choosing my alcohol, and what I didn't realize is it's a progressive disease and I had lost the power of choice. I still had to be 12-stepped into this program. I had been intervened on by four different people. Two family members that were not in the program and didn't need it, two doctors that were not in the program and didn't need it, and my high school drinking buddy all through school, 450 miles away in Martins Ferry, Ohio, called me in December 27th of 1988. He 12-stepped me over the telephone. Over the phone, he 12-stepped me. I had no idea that Butch had 7 years of recovery in AA. The next day, I got in the car, I drove 450 miles, and I went to a meeting with Butch. When I got there, it took me almost 9.5 hours to get up there. As soon as I got there, he threw me in the car, and we went to my first AA meeting. I've been sober ever since that day. The miracle of recovery. I had no idea that it was a progressive disease. I had no idea that I was choosing alcohol because I didn't have any choice anymore. Alcohol was my only solution. And what I found out when I read Bill's story in the Big Book for the first time, that I thought like Bill, I acted like Bill, you know, and I did what Bill did. I always choose alcohol over my family and wise decisions. And I'm ever so grateful to be here today. And 12-step work is a great, is the biggest part of this program when it comes to passing the message on of hope. And I was grateful to hear that once I was an alcoholic, I will always be an alcoholic. That's one of my turning points when Butch talked to me. He said, Bob, once you've crossed the line, you'll never go back, you'll never drink safely ever again. I needed to hear that, absolutely needed to hear that. And these are some of the words that I, when I'm doing a 12-step call, these are the words that I use because these were the words that turned on me and helped me open my ears and my eyes to what's going on in my life and what this disease is truly all about. So I can tell you that working with newcomers, when nothing else works, the big book says this will work for us, and it has been working for me over a long period of time. When I'm with a person that I'm 12-stepping that has read the book and made this decision, the first thing I tell him is what I just shared, that once you cross the line, you'll never ever safely go back. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. But you never have to drink again if you've reached the point where you want and will be willing to accept some help. And it's pretty simple from that point if you can keep it simple. Now, that's an easy statement to talk about, but it's a hard one for a new beginner to accept. So we talk about taking it one day at a time, not taking a drink and getting to a meeting every single night if at all possible. To introduce yourself at every new meeting as a newcomer. That's what I did when I got back from Ohio. The very first meeting I went into, I introduced myself as a newcomer. And let me tell you something, that changed the whole theme of that meeting. They went immediately to the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous. And after the meeting was over, I had a number of people come up to me and give me a hug and tell me, you know what, I never have to drink again if I don't want to, but I'm going to have to take some simple actions that are outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. When I left Ohio, Butch left me with a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Men's Hazelden Meditation book. I still have those two books and several other meditation books as well, and I read them each morning. But when I'm talking to someone who feels like they're ready to start this action, this is what I share to them. I need to be in meetings, in a chair, and try to identify with what you hear in every meeting you go to. There's three suggestions for recovery in the big book, and one is keep an open mind, try to find a new level of honesty, and find the willingness to find a meeting every single night if you can possibly do it and get to that meeting by hook or crook. Keep your ears open. When you get up in the morning, get on your knees and ask your higher power for help keeping you sober that day. And pick up the where and when and look for the closest meeting that you can find that evening and get to that meeting. And at night, end the very same way. Get a list of telephone numbers from people in the meetings and have those numbers readily available at any time you can reach for them and make a call. I was told to have at least 5 to 10 numbers. And if the first three don't answer the phone and you have to leave a message, don't wait for a return call. Keep dialing the phone until you get an alcoholic on the phone. That was a lifesaver for me, and I'll tell you why. I stayed drunk the last 2.5 years at my beach house on New Point Comfort on the Chesapeake Bay. I stayed drunk every day for 2.5 years. That was my last 2.5 years of active alcoholism. And I can tell you that my mind was foggy and my decision-making was terrible. And I tried many times to stop the booze. I share this. There's a piece in Bill's story where Ebby comes to visit Bill. And I'll never forget this, and I try to remember it when I'm making a 12-step call. Bill said, I'm going to paraphrase, there was something inexplicably different about his eyes. They were different than he had ever seen them. Something was happening to the old boy, and he could see it. Bill could see it in Ebby's eyes. And I try to let those eyes be shown when I'm working with a new person. I try to be calm and quiet. I try to simply pass on the exact message that was passed on to me that brought me into the rooms of AA. We can't force people into sobriety. I came in when I was done and didn't know I was done. And I was suicidal the week Butch called me back in 1988. I'm so grateful for the 12th step of the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sponsor a number of guys. I love sponsoring guys. And I really like working with people who have relapsed. I've never relapsed. I'm going to tell you what I was told. You never have to drink again if you don't want to, but you're going to have to take some action. And we talk about that action. I try to set up a second meeting with this person to have them share my story. I've never pressured anyone to do that, but you know what? Almost every person's willing to do that. Even if they can only share for 15 minutes, I usually get them to do that. They usually agree. And they usually keep the appointment. So I'm glad to be here and thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Terry. My name's Terry, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Terry.
And I'm really glad you have microphones because this is about as loud as I can talk. My sobriety date is January 17th, 1994. I, unlike Bob, I started drinking relatively late in life. I was toward the end of my college years when I started drinking, and then I started working in the restaurant business, and I felt like I had met my people, because I met people who drank every day, and went out drinking after work, and I drank for 20 years, and it was just a pretty steady, you know, not a lot of peaks and valleys, just a steady downward slide into nightly blackout drinking. And I did not associate the fact that I was a nightly blackout drinker with the fact that I was changing jobs a lot and my marriage was failing. I thought that my husband's problems were my husband's problems and that my problems were separate from them. As a matter of fact, I thought if he would get over his problems, I wouldn't have to drink so much. I had a lot of blaming, a lot of moving, a lot of changing where I was. I did not go to the beach house and drink for 2.5 years. I moved every year or two. When I was finally, well, I'll back up a little bit. 2 years before I got sober, I got DUIs back to back on Valentine's and then the next month on St. Patrick's Day. I wasn't drinking any more than usual because, I was a nightly blackout drinker. I wasn't drinking any more than usual. There were just more cops out that night. It was stupid to be on the road. And I got caught. And I went to the ASAP program. And I didn't get sober, but I got an education that convinced me that I was an alcoholic. I answered yes to 18 out of 20 questions that might indicate that I was an alcoholic, and I thought, okay, I can live with this. You know, I can deal with this. I'll just tough it out. And I heard them say that it was going to get worse, and I didn't reckon on how much worse it was. 2 years later, I was ready to quit drinking. My husband and I's marriage counselor didn't save our marriage, but probably saved my life. When I got that first DUI, I mentioned to him that that I thought maybe it was a good thing. I had been telling him, I have no idea why I told so many truths because I spent most of that period of my life lying right and left. But I pretty much told him everything. I had talked to him quite frankly about how much I drank, and I noticed that his eyebrows kind of went up because I weighed about 100 pounds at the time. I'm sure he wondered where I was putting it. But I said to him after that DUI, what if I'm something more than just a heavy drinker? You know, what if I really have like kind of a problem or something? And he said,
He didn't say the only thing. He said the only thing that we know that works for large numbers of people is AA. He didn't say that's the only way to do it. He didn't say you better go to AA tomorrow. He didn't say you have to anything. He just told that simple truth, and it stuck in my mind like glue. And when I was ready to get sober 2 years later, I liked AA when I went through the ASAP program. I could see that it was working for people who were in the program. I really appreciated them. I remember my first meeting clearly, but I wasn't ready to quit drinking. But when I was ready, and I came in, I knew that it was, at the time I felt like it was a lifelong sentence, and I knew that and I accepted it. And now I feel like it's a lifelong gift. My home group is the Williamsburg 12 and 12 on Wednesday nights, and it has been my home group for all of those 25 years. And my favorite meeting is a step meeting. I'm very happy to be here tonight. When I looked on the wall and read the meeting, the steps and the traditions of the meetings, the traditions might as well have been Chinese. I had no idea what they were about. But when I read the steps on the wall, I did not see how there was any way that I could do some of them. In the first place, I couldn't talk. I didn't talk at all for the first 2 years that I was sober. And I didn't see how I was ever going to work specifically steps 5 and 9, because there were people that I was never going to approach again as long as I lived. But I had this dim idea. I still worked in the restaurant business. I could get off on Wednesday nights, and I had this dim idea that if I went to a step meeting often enough and heard people talk about working the steps often enough, that maybe, just maybe, I would figure out a way to work all of them. And that proved to be one of those, you know, really bright early intuitions that I had. I had a lot of crazy ideas in early sobriety, but that was a very sane one for me, and that's how it worked out. I frequently tell people that that I owe my sobriety to AA, but I owe my happiness to the steps. I do not really have freedom from anxiety or any real peace of mind or any... I spend a lot of my life now with a little bubble of joy inside of me. When times are tough, I frequently feel like everything's going to be okay in the long run, even if it's not going to be okay. And I've not come here that way. The steps gave me that. Mm-hmm. So I think we probably talked on that a little bit long enough. The reading that we just heard is really about the second time that you get together with... The reading follows talking about working with a newcomer. And you know, working with newcomers is pretty different now from it was from the way it was at the time that the book was written. I meet newcomers largely by having newcomers walk into our meeting, and if they're women, I'll go up to them after the meeting, and everybody in the meetings that I go to in Williamsburg, all the women are pretty good about that, you know, making sure that they introduce themselves. If the crowd is so thick that I can't get to that person the first night, the next time I see them, I'll make sure that we pass a card around and we get phone numbers. I just got a new sponsee, and I just had or set my second meeting with her. So it was kind of timely that the next day David sent these questions to us, or these readings to us. It's real easy when you are working with somebody who is not a brand new drunk to fall into a pattern of just socializing or finding out social kinds of things or about that person's background. And if you are working, my experience is that if I am working with somebody who is not particularly eager to work the steps, that they'll try to keep it there. One of two things happens. You know, they want you to be their buddy, or they want you to be their sounding board for things that they like to complain about. Usually it's relationships or work. And I try to steer clear of that. I mean, it's a learned skill for me. I'm not somebody who is great at driving the topic back to where it's supposed to be, but I try to focus on, you know, what step are you working now? How many meetings are you going to? Bob mentioned making sure that newcomers, and this applies to people who are new to an area, which is the case for my new sponsee. How many other phone numbers do you have? Who else are you talking to? I am not anybody's soul savior, and I don't think that that's the role of a sponsor. Myself and most of the women that I work pretty closely with in Williamsburg are emphatic about having a network. And the good news for me is that my new sponsee is used to that where she came from. So those are kind of some of the things that we talked about. As we get further into the questions, I'll have some other comments about working with new people.
Awesome. Okay, we're going to keep going on page 98. It is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give that often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house.
Amen. I'll go first this time. That last sentence is one of my favorites in all of AA literature. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. I mentioned relationships and jobs. You know, the two things that I am just like everybody else. Those are the two things that I found myself complaining about to my sponsor too. You know, the way things didn't go the way I wanted them to go at work, or whatever was going wrong in my relationships. And my sponsor constantly steered the conversation back to my side of the street. My side of the street. I was already doing this even before I had a sponsor. I would break a problem down by applying the serenity prayer to it. I can remember doing this when I was very newly sober and I was at work, and I was working with a person who was a jerk. And I can remember standing, smoking on the back dock of where I was working, thinking, there's nothing that I can do about this, because I had sort of gone through that process of asking myself, could I change it? Was I supposed to change it? And did I have the courage to change it? Well, right off the bat, you know, there's a lot that we can't do. In the beginning of this reading, there is the question of giving, and I think it follows a short passage about whether or not we give or lend money. I have on very rare occasions lent money to somebody. And it was in a situation where I thought it was justified. I ran it by my own sponsor. And I lent money to that same person a few years later for a similar reason. It worked out well both times. I don't have any rules about never ever doing that. But I don't feel like that's my role. And I also, I came in here with a whole lot of debt. I got sober, had $35,000 in debt, and I was making about $17,000 a year. And I was barely employable. I worked the first 8 years that I was sober, I worked as a bartender. And, you know, I was able to work my way out of that, but I learned from that how to work my way out of that. And so I'm able to share with anybody who's willing to do what I did to get out of debt. I'm able to share what I did. I can't make anybody do it, but I can't buy anybody else's sobriety by lending them money. But certainly there have been people who've been stuck in situations where I've done that. I am far more likely to give rides to help people get where they need to go. The one place where I have almost no limitations on that is giving somebody a ride to a meeting. If somebody doesn't have transportation to a meeting and they need a ride to a meeting, I will give them a ride even if I don't know them and I get a call from AA saying that somebody in a hotel room, even if it's a man, somebody across town in a hotel room needs a ride to an AA meeting. I will pretty much do that under any circumstances. I will say that I went through a crazy stretch of my life where I had 6 sponsees, and I realized that I was actually sponsoring at a sponsor-sponsee relationship with 4 of them. One of them never called. And the other one, I was her taxi driver. I drove her everywhere, and while I was driving her, I listened to her complain about everyone else in her life. And so, you know, it was a learning experience for me. I have been careful to think when I'm doing things for other people, if I'm doing things that they ought to be taking on for themselves. And there's also a lot of situations, you know, when I first got, I didn't have a car when I got sober, but after I'd been sober for a year and I had a car, I was able to start helping somebody else. Even newcomers can do things, do acts of service. They can help set up meetings. I have, for the last 3 years, met one of my sponsees one night of the week to set up our home group. And I think that acts of service and reaching out to other people, if I am doing something for somebody that I have a sponsor-sponsee relationship with, I try to make sure that they are investing in themselves and also in other people in the program. And I can't say enough about endless complaints about relationships and employers. It is really easy to fall into that pattern, into listening to it. And it can be family members. It doesn't have to be your significant other. It can be other family members. In fact, Bob and I had a conversation on the way down here about that very subject. But that's not really what we're here for. We're here to help our sponsees work through steps and to take a look at what is going on their side of the street. That's what my sponsor did for me, and that's pretty much all I have to pass on.
Bob. Thanks, Terry. Well, my sponsor says money changes everything. I believe that today wholeheartedly. I will tell you that I've lent money, and here's the way I do it. If I'm going to lend money, in my mind, it has to be for a very good reason. I've done it a number of times, and I do it based on the fact that I never expect to ever have that money put back into my pocket. And if you don't do it that way, you're going to get a resentment. Mm-hmm. So I caution that for sure. I brought people to my home. I brought a guy. This story is crazy. I came out of the Newington Baptist Church basement meeting one night. This was probably 15, 18 years ago. And this guy, Marty, was sleeping in his car, an old Chevrolet. He had 6 inches of snow on the car, and I could see a figure in the car. And this was 9 o'clock at night, and I knocked on the window, and he actually has a tarpaulin in the front seat wrapped around him. And I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I don't have any place to go. I've been sleeping in my car. It's the dead of winter. And I said, look, I'm over in Matthews. This was in Gloucester. I said, I've got an extra bedroom. Come spend the night, and in the morning we'll chat a little bit. So he did, and when morning came, what I said to him was this: I'm going to give you a date on the calendar. You can stay here up till that date. You're going to have plenty of time to work out where you're going to go besides your car. And the date was about 6 weeks. And here's what happened at the end of 6 weeks. He did everything I asked him to do as far as living in my home. And at the end of the 6 weeks, where do you think I found him the first night?
In the car.
In his car, back in his car. To this day, I ran into him not too long ago. This was years ago, but I ran into him not too long ago, and he was just kind of hanging out on in front of a 7-Eleven in Gloucester. I don't think anything in his life has really ever changed. He did go to a lot of meetings, but he never grabbed a sponsor. He certainly didn't use me as a sponsor, and I obviously offered sponsorship to him. I learned from that, and if I'm going to invite, and I will do it in the future if I find it necessary, but I'll always set a date and make it very clear to them that when this date comes, you move out, and I hope you'll have a place to go to by that time. You know, it seems like every sponsee to some degree I've ever had is either in a relationship problem that brought him to his drinking knees, lost a job, or never was able to hold on to a job, yet lots of jobs couldn't hang on to him. People that are always in a tiff with their family, and the family's always wrong, you know. Amazingly. And what I basically tell them is, you're going to have to take some real action. Do you think, this was said to me, by the way, by Butch Miller before I left Ohio, do you think you have the ability to follow some simple guidelines and instructions? And I said yes, that I could, to Butch, and I found out I wasn't as yesable as I thought, as I thought once I got into it. But you know what? Are you ready? Are you ready to do whatever it takes for sobriety in your life and in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? And if I get a yes to that, then I hold them to it. My gauge with listening to someone, I'll listen to them once and maybe twice complaining, and then I tell them, as many losses as you've identified as a result of your drinking, you're going to get that many and more if you continue to drink. So you can either accept the solution that I found that worked for me, and found that in most cases when I was arguing when I was drunk, I was usually wrong. I'm here to say that I'm frequently wrong and rarely right today. But I try very hard to do the right thing, and I really don't listen to it after that. I always take them back to the fact that, you know, through the steps of sobriety, your thinking will change. We have a thinking problem. Our problem centers in our mind. And if they listen to that, sometimes I get a positive reaction from them, and the complaining goes down. Mm-hmm. There's two R's instead of one in AA. Resentments will kill alcoholics. The book says that very clearly. Relationships, the other big R, will kill an alcoholic, or have the alcoholic kill someone else. A lot of people got sober over a relationship resentment. Lost my girlfriend about a month before I really bottomed out. You know, we make a commitment to sobriety, and you don't have to have any precondition on your thoughts. All you got to do is come in and follow a few simple suggestions. And if you'll do that and stay in the seat, and the key is to stay in the seat, in the meetings. I don't know if any one of you were at the oceanfront last year. Gary Kincaid out of Texas spoke. He gave a great talk. I've heard him speak many times. And he says, come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay. And for every time you'll do that in AA, and I've seen this happen over and over again, something begins to change. The ears open up a little more, and they begin to identify more and more and more. And you know what? I can see it in working with a new sponsee in their actions going through the steps. it just becomes apparent they want this now. They want this now. Burning the idea into the consciousness of every man, regardless, you can get sober regardless of anyone. I tried to deal with that as much in the really early stages. I have one philosophy, I've stuck with it for a lot of years. It may not be for you, but I'll share it with you. When I find that I'm working harder at your recovery than you are, I'll go with that for a while, but then I'm going to confront you and then I'm going to get rid of you. You know, because you're not done drinking yet, and I know that. You're just angry. And, you know, I don't fix anybody. I've never cured an alcoholic since I've been here. But I've certainly been willing to share my experience, strength, and hope. But I'm not going to look at and listen to pouting for very, very long. There's a lot of work to do. Let's get started on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. We're going to continue on page 98. Now the domestic problem. I always find that presumptuous. He assumes there's a domestic problem.
It's got to be a domestic.
There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. I don't know who's up.
Me. Well, I try very hard not to get too directive in the family. I try, if I can, to talk to the family at some point separate from the alcoholic themselves to get some sort of sense of what has been going on within the family besides the obvious with an alcoholic. And with just a little bit of insight with the family, I can usually guide the alcoholic a little bit more away from, you know, you can go on trying to control things around you until you realize in recovery that you have no control over people, places, and things. If your marriage is worth saving, if your family means enough to you, let's get sober, let's stay out of the tiffs, and get to a meeting every night. And whatever you do, call me at night or day if you find yourself falling back into the trap. And I call it, you know, you get baited. We get baited so easily, and it turns into an absolute war of the roses. I've never won one of those, and I try to share that. You know what? When you think you're winning, it's sort of like the Texas rattlesnake races where they line all the rattlesnakes up and everybody that's got their snakes got a stick behind them and the gun goes off and you crack the stick behind the snake and the snake takes off. And if your snake's in the lead, you're right behind him. The problem is all the snakes are right behind you. You don't want to be in that. And that's kind of like trying to win at a family, in a family feud. That recovery is something that is usually noticed faster or sooner by the family members than by the alcoholics themselves. But if I can get them out of the mode of trying to control the family about them, and talk about how sick we become and how sick our family is. And in some cases, the family is sicker than the alcoholic themselves. And if not sicker, they're certainly sick from the alcoholic's behavior. And that's something that's not going to change overnight. There's one person that can change, that's you. Are you willing to take the action and monitor, you know, your words that you're going to cause a lot of heartache and pain over? Because we are going to do a fourth step and a fifth step, and you are going to do an amends like I did. Let's not make any more issues with family and make more amends to have to make down the road. Concentrate and focus on your higher power, on your prayer, and going through the steps, and then begin to apply these as we go along. You don't wait till the end to apply the steps. You begin to apply what you're hearing and the steps that you're working on now. It's the same thing we do with years of sobriety. We practice these principles in all our affairs. Family, job, neighbors, the banks, you name it, government. I mean, I learned in AA, a lot of my recovery and joy, as Terry mentioned, and peace that I get is because I'm not creating the drama on a daily basis in my life. I know where the drama comes from. It comes from the brain to the mouth. And it's automatically, if I'm thinking it, it goes right out my lips. And that takes a little bit of time. But you know what? With God's help and the sponsor, little by little, I learn to make me the one that has to change. And when they see the change, you will begin to see a different family, and it will become easier to deal with. The drama will go away. There's no perfect family in the world ever. You better hang on to that thought.
Thanks, Bob. Mm-hmm. I remember reading this reading pretty early on. There's not much that I heard early on that stuck in my mind. I used to read pages of the Big Book in early sobriety, and I'd get to the bottom of the page, and I couldn't remember what I just read. But my brain did heal, and I can remember reading these passages, and they kind of appealed to me. It sounded to me as though if you could just bite your tongue and not get into arguments with people that lived in your household and lead a visibly virtuous life in front of them for long enough, eventually they would come to you and admit all their faults. That's how I read that reading early on. That's what that sounded like to me. It sounded like all of a sudden, you know, at the breakfast table, the whole family would be in group therapy. What I think is a more realistic situation, I frequently hear in meetings, you know, at least once a year or so, I'll hear somebody say, you know, when I got sober and I worked with a sponsor and I prayed every day and I followed my sponsor's suggestions, the people around me got better. The people around me got better. So I do think that, you know, our own improved behavior, our own minding our own side of the street, working on our own character defects, working the steps, having healthy spiritual practices, all of those things make us easier to live with. But I don't think it's a question of, I think we just become more bearable, more likable maybe. I don't think it's a matter of, you know, the family looking at us and going, whoa, what a guru I'm married to now, all of a sudden. I don't think it's like that at all. I think we just all become more bearable when the most unbearable person in the room starts to get healthy. I think that that's kind of what that looked like. I don't know any families that have collectively begun to discuss their individual shortcomings. I also don't know a whole lot of people. I have not worked closely with a whole lot of people who are in loudly argumentative households. Most of the people who I've worked with are more like me. They're more non-confrontational. In our family, we just figuratively and literally walk away from each other when things go south. We just evaporate. So I tend to get mostly sponsees who do things like that, and that's probably an arrangement. But I also have worked with a lot of people who are in a lot of different situations, people who have children, people who don't have children, people whose personalities or preferences are maybe way different from mine. And so if I ever think that I'm not, that maybe we're not relating over something that they're having difficulty on, or if they're resisting my suggestions, which all come from my experience and from the big book and from other people in the program, I will try to think of the person that we both know who is in the situation most like theirs, or who has that same personality trait that is driving whatever their resistance is. And I try to steer them to that person and say, go ask. You know, go ask. Go ask three people that you respect in the program what they think about whatever the problem du jour is. And that's a wonderful solution. I oftentimes find that crises, which are typical for someone I work with, will arise just at the time that they are working on a relevant step. Like something will come to a boiling point in their life just as they get to the step that they need to deal. That was my experience too. And so it's been interesting to watch that unfold in the lives of others. And I always attribute that to God's timing.
Awesome. This hour has flown by. I'm gonna do one more reading, and if there's something you might want to take a minute with, that'd be cool. Page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
I just wrote five things down for walking day by day on the spiritual path. I try to do these things every day in fair weather and foul. In foul weather, I make sure that I'm doing them every day. I pull this piece of paper out and look at it and ask myself. And sometimes I double down on it. I also go to more meetings. But day by day, I spend time with God in the morning. Some of the readings that Bob talked about and some other ones as well. I pray. I pray in the morning and I pray in the evening. I don't pray as much as I should. I once committed through my church, and it doesn't matter what denomination it is, but I once committed through my church to pray for an hour every day. And what I can say about that is that it was the smoothest stretch of my life. I prayed for a half hour in the morning and a half hour at night. And I have no excuse for not going back to it, except that it's hard to get into that habit. I go to meetings. I go to at least three meetings. 3.5 meetings a week is my dose. So I go to 3 or 4 meetings a week, and if I'm in trouble, I go to more meetings than that. I did 90 and 90, and then I did 90 and 90 again when I was newly sober. I talk to another alcoholic daily. I don't talk to my sponsor every day, but I talk to at least one person in the program, usually 3 or 4, and I do something to help somebody else. I do service work. I do work with a couple of sponsees. But I have other service commitments in my life as well. I wouldn't have those commitments, which bring me more joy than any single other thing, if I didn't have AA and I hadn't gotten sober. So help somebody else out as anonymously as possible.
Thank you. This happens to be one of the greatest paragraphs in the first 164 pages. Both you and the man must walk day by day. When I'm working with a sponsee, they have no idea that they're doing more for me than I'm ever going to do for them. And it really speaks to that. The spiritual path is basically this. These 12 steps, if you'll read on page 15, the foreword of the 12 and 12, right in the middle of the page it says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature. If practice is a way of life, will expel the obsession to drink enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. That's exactly what AA has done in my life. This reading, when we look back, we realize that the things which had come to us when we put ourselves in God's hands was better than anything I could have ever planned. I found that to be absolute truth in my recovery. It talks about remarkable if you persist, remarkable things will happen. Sobriety without trying, without eking, not drinking, white knuckling is what it's taught. I don't have to do that. I haven't done that in years and years. That's an absolute blessing to any alcoholic, a real alcoholic. But it says, follow the dictates of a higher power. That's the steps. And that's my prayer life. That's my commitment to my higher power, which is every single morning. And if I got a busy, busy day, I have to get up earlier to do that. Because mm-hmm. this is how I start my attitude. There's two things in AA you got to watch closely, and you better learn to recognize it. I found it out. Where's my attitude? And if I have an attitude, I got a motive behind it. And if I can find that motive, I can keep myself out of trouble and not drinking. And if I can't, I better work a little harder. But here we go with this, and I love this line. No matter what your present circumstances. I've had sponsees that I have been told by people, he'll never make it. There's no way this guy's going to make it. And guess what? They do make it. This sentence, this paragraph is awesome. And I would suggest to you that you earmark page 100. And if you're new in the program, read this paragraph two or three times during the day. And you'll know you're on the right path. And every day you can ask yourself, am I ready for a life I could have never dreamed I was going to end up with? And no matter what your present circumstances, come all the way in, sit all the way down, and stay in AA. Thanks.
Thank you, Father.
Thank you guys so much. We're going to pass the Seven Tradition Basket. The Seven Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar doesn't support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight?
I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Grant.
My home group is Simple Action. We meet on Monday nights, obviously. So, if you're interested and bored next Monday night, we have something to speak here. Or no, not next Monday night, the Monday after that, the 18th.
Next Monday.
We're having fun.
Yeah, I'm doing my math all wrong. So forgive me, please. Something to speak here, 6 o'clock. We'll have food and fellowship. If you want to join us, come out. If you can bring a dish, please do. And at 7 o'clock, we'll have a speaker, Nita Kay, coming from Richmond, Virginia. Bring a little experience, drink the hope. It's going to be lit. So come out and join us. Thanks.
Nice and loud, Jonathan. No West Side tomorrow night.
Who tight? Larry, alcoholic.
Larry.
Hi, Larry.
For the women, there is a women's workshop in Chesapeake on February 23rd from 10 to 1. It's a women's workshop on man drive. And 10 to 1.
Somebody's got one. Wow, lots of them.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay.
My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
February 23rd from 6 to 10:30 p.m. with the Research Research Park Committee. We are hosting a game night, lip sync battle, and a topic speaker. 1600 Clinton Avenue, North of Virginia. We're trying to raise money so we can try and show that we can raise money for this convention we're trying to bring here in 2020. So, if you want the flyer, you want some more information about it, just come up to me after the meeting. I'll give it to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Gail, alcoholic.
Hey, Gail.
Hey, Gail.
There's a new meeting called The Meeting at, what's it called? Holy Trinity Church, the Scout House behind the church. It is a pamphlet study meeting. So, you've seen them, now come read them.
Nice. Kendra. Saturday night speaker is worth the price of admission alone. Anybody else? In case any of that was confusing to you, next week, in this room, right here, 6 o'clock, bring a dish, 7 o'clock speaker. All are welcome at this meeting.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. And newcomers, you are the reason we are here. Is there anyone in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody?
Daryl.
Daryl, welcome.
Welcome.
My name is Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic.
Stephanie, welcome.
Kevin, alcoholic.
Kevin, welcome. I'm feeling like three more. I'll wait. There's literature available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. If you'd like a book, the prices are there. Or if you'd like a book and you don't have the price, Bob's lending money. He already said it. I don't lend money.
It's a test.
Seriously, you can steal it. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. There's also a little place on simpleactions.net where you can sign up for a mailing list if you want to kind of be in, get an email for anything that's happening at the group. We'll be happy. That's an opt-in thing. So, I don't know if you guys felt it, but tonight was kind of special. Can we thank our speaker? Thank you. That was wonderful. And may I please have a volunteer read the last technically three paragraphs on page 164, nice and loud. Somebody, come on.
You got the book?
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Thank you. Plaza del Sol after this? Yeah? Okay. Let's pray. I think we can stretch it.
Somebody's going to have to come down the aisle. Well, they might make it. Give them some more room.
We got it. We got this.
We'll figure it out.
Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Yay.
Thank you so much.